You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade.
Welcome back once again. Believe it or not, it's time for installment number 57 of the one and only Church of the Lampshade show. Again, another week has flown by, unless you've already been wiped out by Corona-chan. If you are still alive out there, if there's anybody still alive out there in the void that hasn't been taken out by Corona-chan, well, thank you for spending apparently your last few days here on Earth by tuning in, listening to this show. Glad to have you on board. I think we'll have a great show. I feel a little less salty this week than I did last week, so maybe we'll be a little more upbeat. And why not? Why wouldn't we be upbeat? Because it's all about Corona-chan this week. What else could we talk about? Because that is what everybody is on and talking about. So yeah, we're going to get right into it. As always, we like to start the show off talking about my personal favorite topic, listener supporters. That's right. We have to open every show with me shilling for shekels. And recognizing those who actually get enough out of the show to find it worth, you know, chipping in and helping keep the lights on. And, you know, it's a tough patch right here, right now in the lampshade world. And we're just in a tough financial patch. And I really, really do appreciate those of you who do get enough out of the show to find it worthwhile. So that having been said, before we get into that, I will just say a note to Greece, a letter received. I will pass that on to the network. And I'm sure it is very much appreciated here, as well as from Radio Albion, Sven Longshanks. We have 6 supporters this week, including 2 Bitcoin Anons and 1 Altcoin Anon. Speaking of which, Seattle Kirk, Grandpa Lampshade, great hearing your voice on the podcast. Sending best wishes for you and your fam. Sent you some Monero to fuel up the podcasting machine. That's right. We do any kind of crypto. If you don't want to do the Bitcoin, drop me an email. I'll get you an address for whatever kind of fun, funky cryptocurrency you may have. I'm not proud. I'll even take Zcash. I don't care. I'll take your ox. I have no pride. Next up, we've got Mr. T, one of our standby weekly supporters. Just want to say, Grandpa, I asked you to read this on the air. Just want to point out what you and your family have been through and all the persecution you faced, all sorts of things, and still Grandpa Lampshade doesn't give up. He keeps bringing us the truth, the gospel with humor. Added, he could change his name, move away, and start over, but he doesn't. This is spiritual strength. Could you not all take the time to slide $5 or more into an envelope and mail it to him? You don't even have to put on a return address. I assure you the Mossad will not come ziplining through your window for your help supporting this great work. May God bless and keep you all. Mr. T wanted me to pass that on as his note this week to everybody else. Help me with my shekel shilling. You know, I really do. I do appreciate it. Those of you that do kick in. And it does amaze me how people do get, shall we say, a little overly paranoid. I've had people, you know, I'm like, you know, they ask me stuff and I'm like, you know, just listen to the show. And they'll be like, well, I don't want to be going on there. That site's probably being watched or something. It's like, watched by who and for what exactly? You know, we're not doing anything illegal here, folks. I mean, we go out of our way to be extra, extra careful to make sure we don't even say anything that could, like, if you stood on your head and closed one eye, could, like, run afoul of it. I mean, there's no illegality going on here. We're fine, upstanding citizens here at Radio Albion, and yet you'll have people be, like, all paranoid to even listen to the show. You know, at least y'all are listening into the show. But no, I appreciate the kind words and the appeal for shekels. You know, like I say, I always feel a little awkward. Honestly, I try to make light of it because I do feel awkward, but it is an important thing. And the fact of the matter is, if everybody listened to the show through and a whole $5 a month, not even a week, a month. If every single person did that, I'd be a living large lampshade. And instead of a hope I can pay the electric bill this week lampshade. But that's the way it works, you know, and we will not put the show behind a paywall, you know, and people will say, well, as long as it's for free, you know, that's just how it is. Well, yeah, but I mean, we're not going to put it behind a paywall either. I mean, that's not the reason we do this. Ultimately, it is just up to the listeners to feel as though they got something enough out of this stuff to where, hey, it's worth supporting. And again, that's why it means so much to me when I do get the support aside from, obviously, I could always use the financial help. It's the fact that this tells me these people that send these things in, you know, every week, every month, however often they send it, it tells me that, you know, you actually get something out of the show enough that it means enough to you that you're like, hey, you know, I'm going to actually do something. And it really, these weeks, you know, those weeks where it's like, why am I doing this? You know, it's nice to know. It really is. It's aside from the money, it's just the moral support of knowing, you know, that there are people that get enough out of this that, hey, it's worth, you know, as Mr. T says, you know, $5. I don't care. I'm not asking for your family fortune. Just pass on a pack of cigarettes and support the Lampshade Show. Tony, send in support this week. Very much appreciated. And finally, the last up from our reader listener mailbag. Grandpa Lampshade, still around and kicking. Do you think the Jews may have something to do with the coronavirus? It wouldn't surprise me if they did, but I don't want to spread anything false. Stay safe, Triangle Whip. Perfect question, because that's what this show is all about this week, is corona. It's all about the corona chon this week. So a perfectly timed listener question there. And before we head off into Corona Land, I just want to remind you that if you do want to be a part of supporting the show, that information's at the bottom of this page. We got snail mail, we got Bitcoin, and as I said before, we'll take any other kind of crypto. Just drop me an email, let me know what you're wanting to send this way, and I'll get you an address for that. And I'd like to say to the listener in this case, I applaud your approach of not being like knee-jerk blaming the Jews, because I mean, one of the things that wears me out is you observe the simplistic way that people, especially here in America, view politics. I mean, you have the commies and they just are literally like NPCs of orange man bad, orange man bad, orange man bad. And normicons aren't any better. I mean, they're just like these dang liberals, you know, these dang liberals are to blame for everything. You know, it's like American politics with the two-party system is basically down to rooting for your favorite sports ball team. That is what it is down to in this country. And very few people move beyond that and try to look at the intricacies. And I think it's very important that we never become so simplistic, because we're truth seekers. If you listen to this show, I consider you a fellow truth seeker. And that is a compliment, because it is a rare thing in, honestly, the stupid clown world that we live in. And we want to seek the truth. We want to speak the truth when it's not popular. We still do it. That's the whole plan. And we never want to get so simplistic and stupid and shall I dare say lazy in our thinking that anything that pops up, we just say it's the Jews and then that's it. We don't think of it beyond that. We don't actually have any proof that it's the Jews. We just say it's the Jews, because that's just yet another version of lazy, simplistic thinking. And I applaud the listener for saying, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they did. I'm not going to sit here and just say it's the Jews and look like a fool, you know, and it encourages me. And that's a good thing, because when looking around with all of the corona action this week, it's hard to have a lot of faith. It's hard to have a lot of faith in your fellow man. We're going to look at the corona situation with what we know, which is always limited information, because we're lied to about virtually everything. We know this. Time and time again, it's been proven that what we're told in the narrative, what we're told in the media, what we're told by the government is lies. You know, there's some truth sprinkled in there, but we're fed what they want us to hear. We know this. So we're always, as always with anything, we're stuck with the limited little bit of information we can get, the little bits of truth out of the narrative, and then what you can find out on the internet. And we just try to piece it together. We can't put the whole puzzle together on any of these things because we don't have all the information. We're never going to get all the information. Because those that do have the information damn sure aren't going to tell us. But we hope that we can pick out enough pieces of the puzzle to at least get it together. Like, I just literally think of putting together a puzzle. If you had half the pieces, but you were able to make enough of those fit together, you could stand back and close one eye and look at it and be like, I think this is a picture of, and you could at least get an idea. You could tell it's a, say, a rural landscape picture. Maybe there's a piece of a barn right there or something, you know, versus it's not a city. You at least know that it's not a city. You know, this puzzle isn't a city landscape. It's apparently a rural. I see some trees. That's obvious. Maybe that is what looks like a part of a barn back here. And that's what we are stuck with when it comes to getting down to you know, to the facts, to the truth about these things. Because we are truth seekers, we will take our information, what information we have, and again, it's admittedly very limited, and we'll try to figure out, at least get a little closer to the truth than the people that just are panicking and going out there and buying toilet paper. Like, we're going to get into that. This whole thing is just not increased. You know, not like I had a lot of hope for my fellow man, but this has not been, that has not been real conductive to raising my faith in people, watching them run around like idiots with the corona thing. Before we get in that, let's take a look at the facts, what we do know. As far as this thing, where it may have come from, I have read. First off, is it a natural occurring phenomenon? Now, that's a big question. Is it a natural occurring phenomenon? If it is, then it's just what it is. If it came out of a laboratory, then it gets a little more sticky. I have read several expert opinions who have looked at this thing, and they have said this thing comes out of a laboratory. I rarely believe it because of the way the original virus was so targeted. We'll get into that here in just a second. Now, the narrative tells us this came from a marketplace and people eating bat soup. I think it's funny that they use the bat soup excuse because it's something that obviously you would be repulsed by. You know, you have a picture of somebody sitting in a restaurant with a bat in their chopsticks. You know, it's like, oh, that's so disgusting. No wonder those chinks are spreading all kinds of evil. Two kinds of filthy diseases. Never mind that they've been eating weirdo stuff for centuries now, way longer than America's existed. Never mind, it's because the chinks eat weird stuff, that things that are weird to us. And by the way, before you get off on that, you know, I mean, come on. You know, every culture eats weird stuff. You know, have you ever had a bowl of menudo? I've ate menudo before. For those of you who don't know what menudo is, it's basically like a tomato soup type of thing. And it's got hominy in it and onions. There's several ways to make it. In menudo, there is no middle ground. It's either okay, kind of good, or it's really bad. There is no, you know, well, it's right in the middle. I guess it's all right. It's either, you know, hey, this is pretty good, or it's really, really bad, and it's a very hard thing to make. Anyway. Anyway. So, yeah, the main ingredient in this thing is chopped up tripas, which is going to be intestines. That's right, cow intestines that have been boiled and chopped up into little pieces. And, yeah, you know, you don't really even chew them. You just slide them down your throat. But that bat soup, though. Yeah. What about mountain oysters? How many of you know what mountain oysters are? You ever ate mountain oysters? Well, let me tell you what mountain oysters are, because some of you are from the city, some of you are from Europe. You're going to have no idea what mountain oysters are. Well, when you're cutting calves, and that means you take the male calves and they're getting old enough and you want them to be steers and not bulls. So you have to, that's right, you got to cut those testicles off. But it would be a shame. Somebody along the line thought, you know, it would be a shame to just throw away these bovine testicles. Let's strip the skin off and take the actual balls inside of there. Let's fry them up and eat them. And that's a thing. You could do that. And yes, I've tried them, but they're horrible. just about like what you would imagine. The point here is don't eat. If somebody offers you mountain oysters, damn sure don't eat them raw. And just know that you know you're not eating like shellfish from a river stream in Colorado.
the point is, it's silly. They come up with the excuse of the bat suit because it sounds repulsive. Oh, those filthy chinks and their filthy food that they eat. Like I say, never mind that they've been eating weird things that would be weird to us for centuries without a problem. So I think the bat soup thing was just ridiculous. Apparently, they're still kind of running with it. I don't know. They really kind of just don't really seem to want to talk about where it comes from. Where did this thing get started? China. Oh, okay. It was sporadically started in China. Also interesting, we have yet to hear of them tracking down a patient zero, the first person that had this, you know, which kind of implies that it was started by multiple people at once. This again reinforces the theory that this was released, that this was that this is a man-made, this came out of a laboratory scenario. So with this little bit of information, we're going to go ahead and say we're going to operate on the theory that this indeed came out of a laboratory somewhere. Now, the next question is who? And I have heard everything from, from it's the Jews to it's the Chinese themselves, because they want to somehow ruin Trump's election chances. So they released a virus on themselves. So again, let's just try to look at this as a seeking of truth of sort of manner, and a seeking truth manner. And again, just try to get to what little nuggets of truth and try to come to the best conclusions we can. They're admittedly not going to be perfect conclusions because, again, we have limited information. Now, with this coronavirus, we're talking about two different things here. The original corona, this thing has already mutated once. It's going to mutate again, more than likely, because these things do this. Those who come up with this stuff in a lab, you have to remember these governments and these agencies are so arrogant. They believe they can control this stuff, and then they're just shocked when it gets out of control. But the original version of corona, amazingly, it was severe for Chinese people. I mean, white people were testing positive for this thing and like no symptoms at all, like nothing. It's like they test positive, but they're fine. They're having to sit around in quarantine, but there's nothing wrong with them. Now, once again, this thing has mutated, and now white people are having a bit more severe symptoms and are even dying from it. And the lethal level, if you would, is gotten worse in these other countries. Of course, it's spread now all over the world. But the original version of it now was obviously designed to, attack people of Asian descent and Chinese people, apparently, in particular. So, okay, this is another piece of the puzzle. I've heard people say, well, it came out of a Chinese lab. Well, I find it hard to believe why the Chinese would be working on a virus that kills their own people. I'm sure I'll get a flood of emails telling me why I don't understand that. But, now there is the possibility that it originally came from, say, a U.S. lab and the Chinese stole it and they were stupid and studying it in their lab and let it get out. That's very much a possibility. But now you're talking about a two-step deal. It did come from an American lab, but you're saying it wasn't intentionally released by the U.S. Again, we don't know. We don't know. But the idea that the virus itself was designed by China when its design is to target Chinese people, I think is laughable on its face. I think it's a safe, common sense assumption to say this wasn't invented by the Chinese themselves. Now, also, I think relevant is looking at the reaction to it. When this first broke out, I mean, the Chinese shut it down. They handled this thing like you would handle. They were prepared. Looking at that in comparison to how the US CDC has handled this, the CDC, you have one job and one job only. You've existed for decades. You've received billions and billions of dollars. And for what? To have one purpose for this day. This is your day, your time to shine. You've been sitting on the bench all of this time, making up things to talk about so that you would have a reason to exist. But now your reason to shine is here. Your soul, the CDC's sole reason for existing, is in case of a pandemic, some this sort of situation, this new virus spreading throughout the country, and they're just like, well, we have like, you know, what, 100 tests, and they don't work. Whoops. What the hell have you been doing all of this time? What have you been doing with your money? You're like completely unprepared. You have no, well, we're talking with some private companies, see if they can get some tests that work, and we'll get them out there. We'll buy them and put them out there. I mean, what the hell have they been doing? Why are we paying these people? What is even the point of them existing? I don't know. Now, the U.S. reaction to this, China shut this down. China shut it down. They quarantined the whole city. They brought the military. I mean, they weren't playing. They were trying to keep this thing from spreading. And what did the U.S. do? Oh, we're going to go in there and get Americans and fly them home into a quarantine zone. And fly. It's not like the Chinese were going in there and like gunning people down. We'll just stop the disease by killing everybody. That's not what they were doing. They simply quarantined the city. And we went in there, the U.S. government went in there and brought people out and brought them here. That is not what you would do in this sort of situation. You would tell American citizens quarantine there. We're in contact with the Chinese government. They've assured us they're doing everything they can to, you know, maintain the safety of the people. But you've got to stay there. We cannot risk spreading the infection. That would be the logical thing to do. But they was like, no problem. We'll bring you to America. I think this is interesting. Again, apparently the people most severely affected by this are Chinese and, amazingly enough, Iranians. Two of the biggest boogeymen for the American Tsar government and one of Israel's favorite nemesis. The old question, who benefits here? Again, you would just put these pieces together and come up with as best a conclusion as we can. And again, you have to remember, this thing is mutated now. Now it's getting out of control. Now you got all kinds of people getting infected. But because we're talking now, most of the corona is this new mutated version. And again, it will probably mutate again if it doesn't burn itself out first. Timing. The basically U.S. State Department funded color revolution attempt in Hong Kong. The riots there were just pretty much fizzling out, losing steam. They didn't pick up any momentum. The Chinese didn't take the bait to go in there and just start mowing people down. And they, you know, it was falling out of the news cycle. And then all of a sudden they get hit with this. Coincidence? It's possible. One of my favorite sayings is there's no such thing as coincidence, just plans other people make that they don't tell you about. But so you have to look at that and you have to, and then you had the interesting, because, you know, people talk about a vaccine for this thing. And, you know, it takes years to develop a vaccine, if you can develop a vaccine at all, especially when you're talking about a virus. This isn't a bacterial infection. This is a virus. And that's why it's so difficult to make a vaccine for a virus, because they're constantly mutating and changing. You rush around, you try to create a vaccine for it. About the time you think you got it nailed down, the thing's mutated three times and your vaccine is worthless. It only works on the old version. It doesn't work on the newer version. So, you know, this is why it's so difficult to make a vaccine for things which are viral. And yet you had Israel coming out and say, we should have a vaccine here in a couple of weeks. That's kind of suspicious. That story kind of flared up real quick and then quickly disappeared, because a lot of people were scratching their heads and being like, what? Wait, how would you already have a vaccine in a couple of weeks? So again, you know, where does it come from? What's the motivation? But we can only guess, because we don't have all the information. We're not going to sit here and pretend like we've got it all figured out, because we do not. We do not have it all figured out, because we do not come anywhere near the information. We're working with like maybe 15% of the information of the truth available to us. We're just simply trying to take what we do have and coming to a more logical conclusion than it came from chinks eating weird food, because it's laughable. It's laughable on its face. Continuing with our corona viewpoint. Yes, let's talk about how retarded Americans are with their reaction to this thing. This is just breathtaking. And of course, you know what I'm talking about, the toilet paper thing. What is that? I am the type of person, I would try to make sense of things, even if even those things which don't make sense, which probably makes me, is one of the reasons I get salty and black-pilled all the time, because I spend so much time. I mean, I'm the type of person, if you hand me like a machine and tell me, you know, this machine doesn't work, I've never seen this thing before, I don't know, that you just hand me this machine, say it's broken, it doesn't work, fix it. Yeah, given enough time, I will sit there and figure out how the thing works. And after figuring out how it works, I'll figure out why it's not working, start taking things apart, figuring out why it isn't working, replace what needs to be, put it back together. I'm just that type of person. And my brain always tends to try to just make sense out of things. And so many of the things in our world today make no sense. They make no sense. And it drives me crazy because part of my brain, even though I consciously know, don't try to make sense of this. It's just stupid. Don't. A part of my brain cannot help it. It just sits in my subconscious, I think, just sits there and tries to make some sort of sense. And that is how it is with this toilet paper thing. I cannot imagine. I mean, you're in this big panic over something. And let's be real here. You know, it's still not like, you know, 80% of the people that catch this are going to die. It's nothing like that. More than likely, it's going to be, if you catch this thing, it's going to be the flu. Maybe even just a really bad cold. But of course, they're whipping everybody up about it. But I just can't picture, worst case scenario, you mean you're sitting here. I can't imagine, let's say, sitting here and going, oh my gosh, I'm watching the news, and you know, the network news is totally believable, so I believe everything they're telling me, and there's this horrible pandemic, and we're all going to die at worst. At best, I'm going to be quarantined in my house. The government's going to tell me I can't leave my home, so I'm going to be essentially isolated and on my own, and I'm going to have to find a way to survive. Who knows if the lights will stay on? Who knows if running water is even going to be available? What is my top concern? And what else, what other conclusion can you come to than what am I going to be wiping my ass with? I mean, how do you get there? How do you get there from the mindset of panic, global pandemic, we're all going to be barricaded in our homes trying not to die? My top concern is, what am I going to be wiping my ass with? Merk, buddy. These people are going to vote us into a better future, a better and brighter future. Those that are rushing out and hoarding toilet paper for the toilet paper apocalypse. I myself, I think I'm going to you know, get ahead of the game, start hoarding corn cobs, because that way when they run out of toilet paper, you know, this is like reusable toilet paper. It's like the cloth diapers of ass wiping for Americans. You did, you know, you use the corn cob, then you go out there, you can rinse it off, let it dry, and you can use that thing multiple. Don't flush the corn cobs, folks, because you're just wasting them, and it's going to plug up your plumbing. You have to actually tell people this. The price of food, you know, like the price of beef cattle is actually going down. You would think it would be going up because people would be running out and buying all the food they can and putting it in their freezer and keeping it because they're going to be, you know, in this apocalyptic situation where they're barricaded in their homes. But no, they're worried about what they're going to wipe their big fat American asses with. It's amazing. It's breathtaking. I keep trying to make some sort of sense, trying to find some sort of logical point. And the best thing I can come up with is this is a result of boomers, you know, with limited understanding of the internet. And they saw something on Facebook and that said, you better get the toilet paper. And they all rushed out and bought the toilet paper here, everywhere. You go to the store and the toilet paper shelves are empty. There's still canned food on the shelves. Still canned food on the shelves, still meat in the meat section, but the toilet paper, you are out of your luck when it comes to wiping your ass. Those of you that were counting on a 401k, yeah, Coronachon has been much more deadly for Wall Street. I kind of find it, I can't help it, I kind of find it funny. Yeah, because like the government's reaction through this whole thing, you know, the Trump administration had been like, you know, don't panic, don't worry about it. I don't think it's something to panic over. I think their response to it's laughable. But, you know, again, we're not talking about 80% of the people that are going to die. Yeah, that would be a panic situation. You know, you try to whip me up over under 1% or whatever the number is today. Yeah, I'm not going to get that excited over it. But I think it is funny that they're basically, they're like, you know, don't panic. This isn't any big deal. It'll burn itself out in a month or so. And then Wall Street, you know, tanks over this thing. And it's like, we're going to have to do something. We're going to have a bailout. We're going to have a stimulus. Because the economy is Wall Street, apparently, here in America now. Another one of those things that I find just absolutely breathtaking and disgusting, that the government views the economy as Wall Street. They have to, because they've strip mined the regular economy and turned us into, they told us our economy had to go from manufacturing to becoming based on consumerism. I always found that to be stupid on its face, but that's what we've got. We've got an economy based on the service industry and consumerism. So they have to point to Wall Street. Wall Street is at record high. That means the economy's at record highs. The rest of you are still broke ass, but if you happen to be in Wall Street, you're doing pretty well. But now it's going down. Now we're going to have a panic, and we got to rush around and come up with some sort of deal. Trump floated the idea. We're going to do a payroll tax break, a payroll tax cut to the worker. Up the worker. And, you know, I'm all about that. Anything that will help the working people, I am for. Yeah, I am, because it's like the most abused sector of the nation. And I thought it was funny because the Team D response to that, you know, because again, they can't help but have a knee-jerk reaction of Orange Man bad. It doesn't matter. You know, if Obama was in office and that was his answer, it would be the most brilliant thing in the world. But since it's Trump, it's Orange Man bad. And their reaction is, how is the government going to pay for that? That could cost up to $38 billion. How are they going to cover that? How are they going to cover the cost? How are they going to? Well, we spent $2 trillion on Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, they weren't worried about the cost of that, were they? Every time it's time for the latest war in the Middle East that happens to benefit nobody except maybe our greatest ally ever, they never worry about how the government's going to cover the cost, because, you know, or freedoms or whatever. But you're talking about, oh, well, maybe we'll try to put an extra $20 in the pocket of the working people so that maybe they don't, I don't know, starve to death while they're in Corona-chan isolation. And it's, no, oh, how are we going to cover the cost of that? Really galls me. It really galls me. If you, $1 trillion each. So if you skipped the Iraq war, and you skipped the Afghanistan war, and it took those $2 trillion and gave everybody in the country the money, it goes at like $24,000 a person. I know if I would have got a say on that, you know, you can have Iraq and Afghanistan wars that accomplish nothing, or $24,000. I can tell you right now, I don't even have to think about that. I don't have to even think about that decision. Give me the money. Give me the money. And I'm not going to be sitting here about like, well, I'm worried about smaller government. I don't, that's my socialism. And I don't... They're going to blow the money anyway, because they have to keep borrowing it. That keeps the dollars in circulation. But that's a topic we've had before, and a topic we'll cover again, no doubt, on another day. I'm not going to be sitting here and say, don't give me no $24,000. Give me war in Iraq. We're going to go kick the Taliban's ass in Afghanistan for 20 years and then try to figure out how the hell we're going to get out of that and still claim America. Yeah. But they didn't worry about the cost of that. They weren't worried about the cost of that. If it comes to, hey, maybe we can put a little more money in people's pockets so they don't starve to death if they wind up in self-imposed quarantine or outside imposed quarantine by the government in their house, maybe, you know, so that they can keep their lights on and buy some food. It's, we're going to worry about how much that costs. If it's time for another pointless war, the sky's the limit. Who cares about cost? We've got... Raytheon needs more money. We can't be thinking about that, because the Iraqis, you don't want to be speaking Farsi, do you? Because if we don't go over there and kick their ass and show them America's boss, then that's what's going to happen. Like, just like you could have wound up speaking Vietnamese or whatever. If there's one lesson that people should take from this whole thing, whether you think it is a big deal or whether you think it's way overblown or somewhere in the middle, the one lesson anybody, no matter how simple-minded they are, should be able to take away from this is the understanding that the government is going to be totally incompetent about handling a national disaster. It doesn't matter who you put in there for president, because the whole system is corrupt. And all of the people, virtually all of the people involved in the system are corrupt. All these Congress people, they're corrupt. All of these politics, the whole system is corrupt. It's all based on lies. It's all based on essentially bribery and payoffs and scratching each other's back. And that's real good for the people involved. They get rich. But as far as being a system that functions when everything isn't going smooth, because we're at the point now the system doesn't function now when if things are going really smooth and you throw a hiccup in there, you throw a national emergency, a disaster in the mix, and it grinds to a halt because the system is stupid. The system is corrupt. It can't function. You look at this corona thing, and again, I fall in the camp. I lean towards it's being way overblown. I'm not saying it's not serious, because we're dealing again with a new mutated version that is deadlier than the original version. But still, the death rate is very low, and most of the people are going to die from it have underlying health problems. I mean, that I'm not brushing that off as though that's not, you know, like they don't count. Everybody listening, you know, including myself, you have elderly relatives. You don't want to see them get corona and die. I mean, that's not something any of us want to see or you know, make light of. That's not the point. But the reality is that most of the people that do die from this or have died from this and are going to die from this are going to be elderly people and people and or people with underlying health problems. I mean, that's the truth. So I lean towards this being a bit overblown. But when you look at how the government has handled it, if you look at it as like a trial run, like a, let's see how the government handles a disaster. I mean, this is laughable. Again, this is the CDC's chance to shine. This is their reason to exist. They've had decades to get ready for this moment, and they can't even produce tests that work. And it's not like, oh, it just started here, so we're having to learn everything from scratch. I mean, this has already gone through the whole routine in China. I mean, this isn't that hard. And they go to these private companies. Private companies like, yeah, we got tests at work. They work real quick. So they were able to come up with it, but the CDC is unable to. The notion that the government is going to be able to handle any sort of emergency. Imagine something huge. You know, imagine that the Yellowstone supervolcano, you know, erupts, or even just partially erupts, and the huge disaster that this entails. If you have this belief that the federal government is going to be able to come in, they're going to deploy the military, and they're going to be shipping food in and bringing people out and tending to the wounded and securing the situation, in a couple of weeks they'll have it under control. You are on your own. This situation should tell you, in the case of an asteroid has struck the ocean, and my gosh, you know, the coastal cities are flooded, and this huge disaster is coming upon us. What's the government going to do? They're not going to do anything. I mean, any government would be probably limited on what they could actually do, but this corrupt, you know, horrible system that's based on bribery and lies, it isn't designed to handle national emergencies. It's designed to make those who grease the wheels rich. That's the way it is designed to operate. And in that area, it operates, I guess, pretty good for those people. But to expect something that isn't designed to do things like help the people and keep the nation going during an emergency, it's not designed to do that. It's designed to make politicians and corporations and defense contractors and people that are involved in the system that keep the wheels and the gears greased, it's designed to make them wealthy. That's what this system is designed to do. It's designed to funnel money to the banks. It's designed to funnel money to big corporations. It's designed to funnel money to Israel. It's designed for these things. It is not designed to take care of you in the event of a national emergency. And I think that is the one important lesson that anybody should be able to take away from it, to take away from watching this spectacle. I do indeed believe it's going to burn out in the next month or so, just like the flu burns out. Once flu season's over, this is probably going to burn out. But that's assuming it doesn't mutate again before then and then turn into something that is more resistant. Again, we just don't know. There's a lot of unknowns here. But again, I think the most valuable lesson you can take from this is the grasping the understanding that this system isn't going to handle an emergency. This system, in the event of a real emergency, you are on your own. The government is not going to handle it. your systems are not going to keep functioning. Your comfy life where you just go through the day to day and the lights always work and the plumbing, you know, the toilet's always flush and the water comes on when you turn on the faucet, you know, all of that is up for grabs in the event of some kind of real disaster. And we've seen this time again, you know, when Katrina happened in New Orleans. It's one city. I mean, you can sit here and say, oh, well, yeah, but I mean, it's a majority black city. It's run by blacks. So, of course, you're going to have a poor act. But the whole apparatus of the federal government was focused on this one city. It's just one city. It's not the entire nation. It's not a state. It is one lousy city. And look at how the government handled it. It was completely inept. They were completely unable to it's like they were just never planned for it. And again, you had FEMA in that case. This is, again, their one reason to exist. This is your time to shine. You've existed for decades to get ready for an event like this. Here you go. Show us what you got. And it's like, well, I don't know. I guess we'll have to go out and buy some cheap travel trailers and have people live in them, I guess. Weren't you ready? What have you been doing with the money? With the billions and billions of dollars you've received over the decades, what have you been doing with? What have we been doing with that? Well, we've been building camps because eventually we're going to have to put the people in the camps. I don't know. Anyway, well, yeah, good stuff. Corona, Corona, Corona. We'll see what the narrative is next week. If we're not all dead from Corona-chan, we'll just have to see. So we'll be back to discuss who knows what else next week if we're not dead. I still think Cedar-chan is makes you more miserable than Corona-chan. You know, I probably wouldn't even know. I'd be like, oh, boy, the cedar's really bad. I have Corona. I don't know. You know, I could have Corona and not even know it. I'd just assume it was the cedar is really bad or something. So we're going to wrap up the regular portion of the show. On that note, get into the Christian-specific segment this week. I know you're all looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. And we're gonna no doubt have some fun topics there. So if you don't like sticking around for that, thank you for joining us for the normal part of the show. But I think everybody at this point sticks around for it. So get on in here, fill those pews. It's time for this week's sermon here in the Church of the Lampshade. And as you get settled in here in the Church of the Lampshade this week, we're going to do something kind of a little different, kind of the same. You know, we try to spice it up, try to keep it spicy. We generally read a few verses of scripture and you know, we go from there. We try to reflect on. We're gonna read a lot more scripture this week. It's gonna all kind of be in a continual thing because I want to make an illustration, and we're gonna be in the Old Testament once again this week. And as we do this, I want you to understand that again, 99.999 virtually 100% of the time when I go through the Old Testament stuff, I'm not trying to give you a historical lesson on what happened to those people at that time. Again, I think one of the most valuable things that people miss from the Old Testament is the lesson, the reflection. Is that God doesn't change. So when you read about how God deals with people, with man in the Old Testament, you know, it's true then and it's true today. And that's who he is. That's how, and that's what's, you know, it's not important that this is what he did to those people at that time. You know, I mean, it's important, I guess, from a historical perspective, but it's not important to us, like, it's not important to us in the sense of just directly knowing about that. I mean, who cares what God felt about the Canaanites, yeah, or whoever. Yeah, those damn Philistines, I tell you. And not being able to see it beyond that, you get people that, you know, you get. What we try to do is understand this in the context of, you know, if God viewed the people then in this way and judged the people then, this is important because we are living in the time of judgment. Anybody with half a brain knows it. I'm not saying something new and revolutionary. Anybody with an eye to see and an ear to hear and look around this world today and understand that you live in the time of judgment. God is going to hammer is coming down. The Old Testament is full of God judging nations and peoples. So it just makes sense that if you are living in the time of judgment, you kind of want to get at least a vague idea of why things happen, how things happen, God's attitude about it, how things come about, why God does things the way he does, why the judgments come down, or how the judgments are going to come down. It's a very good idea to go back and see what he's done before, because he's same. He's going to do, it's basically the same thing. I mean, not word for word, not exactly the same, but it's the same in the sense of this is how he relates to people. This is how he judges nations. This is how he judges people. This is why he judges people. This is what makes him angry. This is why, you know, disaster is coming, is or is not coming upon your land. So you have a blueprint of how these things play out. The Old Testament, like I say, is chock full of God judging. It's chock full of people pissing God off and reaping the rewards of that, as it were, reaping the whirlwind, you know. So that's why it's important. I say this because when I go through these things, it's not like I'm trying to drill down on the historical record of what happened then. That's not the point I'm trying to make. I'm trying to make the point of understanding why God does the thing he does and the things he does and how that pertains to you in these times you live in now. It's really not that relevant it's relevant. It's always good to know history. Yeah. But it's not really relevant to you now to know what happened to, you know, God's judgment against the Philistines or something. But it is important to you now to understand why God judges, how this comes down, what makes him angry, and how that pertains to your society today. Because you are living in the time of judgment. I say this time and time again, because people get hung up. They read the New Testament and they read like the book of Acts. And that's all great and wonderful. And they start getting the idea that their role is somehow like a lesser apostle. I'm going to be like the Apostle Paul, and I'm going to go travel the world and spread the gospel. The only place I can think of to go is Africa. And I really don't want to go to Africa. Let's bring them here. And then I'll spread the gospel to the Africans that I bring here. And your role is not, you do not live in the time of spreading the gospel. The gospel has been spread. You live in a time of judgment. Anybody with any kind of sense can look around and see this. This is why we go through these things. If you want to understand the blueprint for judgment, there's no place better to go than the Old Testament. So anyway, with that said, let's get this show on the road. We're going to do the book of Ezekiel. And we're going to start at chapter 16. We're going to start at verse 1. We're going to read a lot here, as much as I can. We may just absolutely run long, or we may just run out of time. And I'm going to have to wrap up with reading enough of this to make the point that we're trying to make here and try to reach the understanding that we can reach. So we're in Ezekiel chapter 16. Again, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, cause Jerusalem to know her abominations. Now, let's stop here, because again, we don't care about what happened to ancient Jerusalem. That's irrelevant to us to know. I mean, if you're really interested in history and want to be educated about that, that's all good and well. How does this pertain to us? So Jerusalem is supposed to be the center of where God's people live. Well, we know that as a Christian people, you are supposed to be God's people. That is your role. You are supposed to be adopted sons via Christ, and thus you are supposed to be God's people. As I read this, because obviously I've read this before, as I read this, I'm looking at Jerusalem and I'm thinking about how people all my life have said, well, as bad as it may be, America is still the most Christian nation on earth. And that may be true in the sense of that's how it identifies, quote unquote, Christian. So you have Jerusalem, which is supposed to be the center of God's people on earth. And now we look at today, America is the most Christian nation on earth. It's not a perfect comparison, but it's something you need to keep in the back of your mind. Remember, we're told in the New Testament that God's judgment starts with his own people. God judges the church first. He judges those who say they're Christian first. He judges those who say, hey, I am of the people of God. That's where the judgment starts. You know, the shitheads running around out here, they're children of the devil. They're an automatic stamp to hell. I mean, God doesn't have to spend any time with that. Judgment starts with his own people. So it just makes sense that as a nation that is supposed to be the most Christian nation on earth, This is going to be something relevant to us in understanding why, you know, understanding about God's judgment. Let's pick up and continue on, because like I say, I got a lot I want to cover here. And if I stop too much, we're not going to get it done. But I want you to keep that in mind, because it's important for what we're trying to do. And say, thus saith the Lord God unto Jerusalem, thy birth and thy nativity is of the land of Canaan. Thy father was an Amorite, and thy mother a Hittite. And as far as thy nativity, in the day thou wast born, thy navel was not cut, neither was thou washed in water to supple thee. Thou wast not salted at all, nor swaddled at all. None I pitied thee to do any of these unto thee, to have compassion upon thee, but thou wast cast out in the open field to the loathing of thy person in the day that thou wast born. You started off as nothing. I started off as nothing. And when I passed by thee and saw thee polluted in thine own blood, I said unto thee, when thou wast in thy blood, live. Yea, I said unto thee, when thou wast in thy blood, live. I have caused thee to multiply as the bud of the field, and thou hast increased and waxen great, and thou art come to excellent ornaments. Thy breasts are fashioned, and thine hair is grown, whereas thou wast naked and bare. I've blessed you. I've caused you to prosper. I looked upon you, and I had pity on you, and I said, hey, you know, cause these people to prosper. Cause this people to prosper. Now, when I passed by thee and looked upon thee, behold, thy time was the time of love, and I spread my skirt over thee and covered thy nakedness. Yea, I swear unto thee, and entered into a covenant with thee, saith the Lord God, and thou becamest mine. And again, remember, as God's people today, you were bought at a high price. God has entered into a covenant with you, a blood covenant through Christ, that you were supposed to be his people. And you have all of these people, this is the Church of the Lampshade, you're probably in pretty good shape, but you have the vast majority of what runs around and proclaims itself to be Christian today in this country, in the West, and look what they're doing. I mean, really, look what they're doing. Look what they're promoting. And how do you counter it when people point out what these churches are doing, when non-believers criticize you and say, well, Christianity, nothing. Look what this church is doing. Look what that church is doing. And it's like, you can't claim they're not, because they're doing all of these abominable things. They're promoting their very own destruction. They're running around bringing immigrant groups in. They're polluting their own land and bringing in hostile foreigners to destroy their own people while proclaiming this to be righteousness. Let's continue on. Then washed I thee with water. Yea, I thoroughly washed away thy blood from thee, and I anointed thee with oil. I clothed thee also with broidered work, and shod thee with badger skin, and I girded thee about with fine linen, and I covered thee with silk. I decked thee also with ornaments, and I put bracelets upon thy hands, and a chain on thy neck, and I put a jewel on thy forehead, and earrings in thine ears, and a beautiful crown upon thine head. Thus wast thou decked with gold and silver, and thy raiment was of fine linen and silk and broidered work. Thou didst eat fine flour and honey and oil, and thou wast exceedingly beautiful, and thou didst prosper into a kingdom. And thy renown went forth among the heathen for thy beauty, for it was perfect through my comeliness, which I had put upon thee, saith the Lord God. So God's giving like a rundown. You've had all of this prosperity. I looked upon you, were nothing. You were nothing. And I brought about this prosperity. I felt sorry for you. I said, hey, let's give these folks a chance. I brought about all this prosperity. I made a covenant with you and said, hey, you know, I'm gonna wash you clean. I'm going to be able to cause you to prosper. And you look at like the history of this country, and which claims to be a Christian nation, and it has reached times of great prosperity. And yet, what has this so-called Christian nation done? with this prosperity? Something new? As we continue on in our scripture reading, we'll see that no, it didn't do anything new. It followed this same pattern that Ezekiel is talking about as he prophesies against Jerusalem. But thou didst trust in thine own beauty and playest the harlot because of thy renown, and pourest out thy fornications on every one that passed by. His it was. And of thy garments thou didst take, and deckest thy high places with diverse colors, and playest the harlot thereupon. The like thing shall not come, neither shall it be so. Thou hast also taken thy fair jewels of my gold and of my silver, which I had given thee, and madest to thyself images of men, and didst commit whoredom with them. So with all of this prosperity, what did they do? What did this country do? What did this nation do? It went chasing after every sort of degeneracy, every sort of abomination, every form of idolatry. They don't call it idolatry today, but that's what it is. Every form of false teaching, this is what is celebrated now. All of this prosperity, and where did it go? What was the end result? Did the people say, oh, God has blessed us with so much. We wanted to be sure we walk in his word and do his right and be humble and remember that as a nation, everything we have is by the grace of God. No, we did this. We built this with our own hands. America itself is something to be worshipped because we're special. American exceptionalism. We hear that all of the time. America's exceptional. America's exceptionalism because the rules don't apply. And the implication of this is that America itself, we as Americans have become like God. We have accomplished this with our own hands. And what has been the result? The people have been given over to madness. They've chased after every sort of abomination. And tookest thy broidered garments and coveredst them, and thou hast set mine oil and mine incense before them, my meat also which I gave thee, fine flour and oil and honey wherewith I fed thee. Thou hast even set it before them for a sweet savour. And thus it was, saith the Lord God. Moreover, thou hast taken thy sons and thy daughters, whom thou hast borne unto me. And these hast thou sacrificed unto them to be devoured. Is this of thy whoredoms a small matter, that thou hast slain my children and delivered them to cause them to pass through the fire for them? Remember, we covered that on a previous show. Pass through the fire was not like a little ceremony where they like waved fire over. They literally burned their infants alive and then had an orgy. And we covered that on a previous show. You can go back and listen to it if you didn't catch it. You sit here and say, well, that's horrible, but what do we have? Do we not sacrifice children today? Do we not have, we have abortion today, just as one example. And even children that aren't literally killed, they're promoting every sort of degeneracy upon the children now as a sacrifice to their idolatry, the latest fad, the latest trend, the latest like. I'm going to cut my 7-year-old's trans. I'm going to start giving him hormones, even though he's not old enough to even start having male hormones. But we're going to start giving him females and make plans to cut his dick off because he's 7. And for what? So I can get likes on Facebook? The children sacrificed. And in all thine abominations and thy whoredoms, thou hast not remembered the days of thy youth, when thou wast naked and bare and wast polluted in thy blood. And it came to pass, after all thy wickedness, woe, woe unto thee, saith the Lord God, that thou hast also built unto thee an eminent place, and hast made thee an high place in every street. Thou hast built thy high place at every head of the way, and hast made thy beauty to be abhorred, and hast opened thy feet to every one that passeth by, and multiplied thy whoredoms. Thou hast also committed fornication with the Egyptians, thy neighbors, great of flesh, and hast increased thy whoredoms to provoke me to anger. It doesn't sound like God's real big on welcoming in the foreigners. That's important, the third world here. Behold, therefore, I have stretched out my hand over thee, and have diminished thine ordinary food, and delivered thee unto the will of them that hate thee, and the daughters of the Philistines, which are ashamed of thy lewd way. It's so bad that those people who were never even close, you talk about the Philistines all through the Bible, God hates the Philistines. And yet he's saying right here, it's so bad that even the Philistines look at you and are like, what in the hell is wrong with these disgusting people? I sit here and you know, of course, I'm banished to the social media wasteland known as Gab. And I see all of this downing on this constant hatred and downing on the Muslims. You know, and I'm no big, you know, I'm no big fan of the Muslims. I have no problem with them. I think they need to stay over in their own countries. But I see all of this downing on the Muslims and the Muslims this and the Muslims that and hating on the Muslims. And yet the Muslims look at, you know, our degenerate, disgusting society. And they're like, what the hell is wrong with these people? These are people that don't worship the same God as you. They follow a whole separate religion. And even they, they're looking at what is supposed to be the Christian nation on earth. And they're like, man, these are a bunch of degenerate, disgusting people. Thou hast played the whore also with the Assyrians, because thou wast insatiable. You see, this is portrayed time and time as we go through here. This need to go out to foreign countries now and intermingle, and I would even say mix with. And again, he's talking about going out and now you're going to import these people. You see these patterns. We're importing our own destruction. We're going to import all of these other people. God gave us you got a homogenous nation. He gave these people a homogenous nation. He set these things up where people of like culture, of same race, come together and they form a nation and things are peaceful and he blesses you with prosperity. And you piss all over that by importing all of these foreign people into your country. You pollute that. You destroy that thing. This gift gift of your prosperity was supposed to be the gift of a stable, a place to be, a nation of your own, which you should be handing down to your children. And what do? You go and pollute yourself. You go to the third world and start shipping people here. You have oceans around America. And nope, we're going to go across the ocean and we're going to find people in Africa. We're going to go find people in the Middle East and we're going to bring them here and then sit around and piss and moan about what they do. We sit around bitch about, well, we got these people here, these damn Muslims. And yeah, but they didn't come. Somebody brought them here. They imported it. They paid them to come here and they pay them to live here. Your government, which is supposed to represent you because of the freedoms and the democracy. Thou hast played the whore also with the Assyrians because thou wast insatiable. Yea, thou hast played the harlot with them and yet couldst not be satisfied. Thou hast moreover multiplied thy fornication in the land of Canaan unto Chaldea, and yet thou wast not satisfied herewith. God's not big on globalism. It's against the natural order of things. You have the modern cup church, which tries to promote the globalist narrative because, again, whoredoms. And yeah, you read here, God is obviously not a globalist. He's not big on this. And yet, this is what's promoted today. How weak is thine heart, saith the Lord God, seeing thou doest all these things, the work of an imperious, whorish woman. And that thou buildest thine eminent place in the head of every way, and makest thine high place in every street, and has not been as an harlot, in that thou scornest hire. I think that's interesting. He says, has not been as a harlot, in that thou scornest hire. In other words, you're not even getting anything. At least a whore gets paid for it. A slut just goes around and gives it to everybody. You know, at least a whore, you can say, well, she's doing what she's got to do to make a living. You know, I mean, you may not agree with it and you may say shame, shame, shame. But in the end, she's selling the one asset she's got to try to make a living, to try to keep food on the table. Maybe she has a child at home to take care of. You have to respect that. You know, I mean, on at least a certain level, you can say, well, I understand it. God's saying, you're not even a whore. I've said whore to my whoredom, but in the end, you're not even a whore, because a whore at least gets something in return. You're doing this stuff and getting nothing in return. You look at the degeneracy, you look at the globalism, you look at the lies that this supposedly Christian nation has run around and chased after. And what have we gotten in return? You didn't get anything in return. You just went out there like a slut and gave it away. You got all of this thing, you got all this prosperity, you got all this gifts, you got all these promises from God, and you pissed it away. Didn't even whore it away because you got nothing in return. But as a wife that committeth adultery, which taketh strangers instead of her husband, they give gifts to all whores, but thou givest thy gifts to all thy lovers, and hirest them, that they may come unto thee on every side for thy whoredom. And the contrary is in thee from other women in thy whoredoms, whereas none followeth thee to commit whoredoms, and in that thou givest a reward, and no reward is given unto thee. Therefore thou art contrary. Again, God is saying, what are you getting out of this? You're doing all of these things. You're committing all of these horrible, atrocious acts. You're chasing after all of this degeneracy. You're chasing after all of the, you're doing all of these things. And he's pointing out, you're not even getting anything in return. You're just giving it away. You've taken your prosperity that I've given you, and you're pissing it away. It would be one thing if you were finding great prosperity. The more degeneracy you chase, that would make some sort of sense because you're getting something out of it. You said, well, it's wrong and it's against the will of the Lord, but you can see why they're doing it, because they've chased after this thing and their nation's getting wealthier and wealthier, but they're not getting wealthier and wealthier. They're giving it away. The people are getting poorer and poorer. The nation is coming apart. Wherefore, O harlot, hear the word of the Lord. Thus saith the Lord God, because thy filthiness was poured out, and thy nakedness discovered through thy whoredoms with thy lovers, and with all the idols of thy abominations, and by the blood of thy children, which thou didst givest unto them. Behold, therefore, I will gather all thy lovers, with whom thou hast taken pleasure, and all them that thou hast loved, with all them that thou hast hated. I will even gather them around about against thee, and will discover thy nakedness unto them, that they may see all thy nakedness. And I will judge thee as women that break wedlock and shed blood are judged, and I will give thee blood in fury and jealousy. I will also give thee into their hand, and they shall throw down thy eminent place, and shall break down thy high places. They shall strip thee also of thy clothes, and shall take thy fair jewels, and leave thee naked and bare. They shall also bring up a company against thee, and they shall stone thee with stones, and thrust thee through with their swords, and they shall burn thy houses with fire, and execute judgments upon thee in the sight of many women. And I shall cause thee to cease from playing the harlot, and thou also shalt give no hire any more. So will I make my fury toward thee to rest, and my jealousy shall depart from thee, and I will be quiet, and I will be no more angry. These people that God is laying out here, he's laying out the people he's going to use to judge. All these you've chased after will destroy you. You look at the West today, you look at America in particular, they're importing all of the third world. And to make the reflection, the comparison, God's saying, basically, judgment's going to consist of giving you what you demand. Good and hard. They're going to see you for what you are. I will strip thee of your arrogance. I will strip you of the facade. I will strip you of the facade of your great prosperity. They're going to see you for what you are. I'll give you over to them to destroy you. It's once again a kind of an illustration of how often God's judgment is simply consists of giving you what you demand. Good and hard. You look at the West, you look at the countries where it's worse in Europe. You look at Sweden, look at Great Britain, where they've imported all of these people. It's not that God has suddenly found favor with the Muslims. It's just, you take Britain, for instance, like London, which is, you've got all these Muslims in London now. And God is saying that, you know, it's not that all of a sudden he's going to take in these Muslims. It's just, okay, these people are going to see you for what you are, and they're going to treat you as the harlot that you are. They sit here and say, oh, well, they treat our women badly, and they have these rape gangs, and they're treating you, they're treating your people like whores, like what they see you as. We spoke on previous show about the people having a livestock mentality. And where does this come from? This is just comes from getting drunk in your own decadence. You know, because the people didn't always have that mentality. But they became fat. They became spoiled. They became full of themselves. They looked around at these things, and instead of saying, look at the blessings that God has granted us, the peaceful times that God has granted us. And instead of that, now they look at these things and say, look what we have done. Look at what we have created with our own hands. We will discard the laws of nature. We will cast away the guidelines, the boundaries that God has set up in nature for our behavior. We will cast those things out, for we are like gods now. Look at me. We must be. Look at all this prosperity that we have. People sit there and say, we got all these foreigners. We got these foreigners in here, and they're doing all of these horrible things, and our countries are coming apart. Yes. Why? Why is that happening? I mean, sure, yes, there are people. This is a concerted effort, being done. But why the, again? What is it with the people that allows this to happen? You've chased after all of these other nations. You've chased after all of these other peoples, and you've chased after these things of the world. And God is going to lay you bare for them to see what you are as a nation and hand you over to them. They'll be disgusted with you. He's saying even the Philistines are looking at ancient Jerusalem and being disgusted with them. It's that bad. And see, even and you import all of these Muslims into the West, and they look at you. They look at your people. They look at your nation for what it is, and they're disgusted. They see it for what it is. They see your women falling down on the street in their own vomit, dressed like whores, and their drunken whores look like drunken whores out on the street. And what, we're supposed to be outraged because they treat the women like drunken whores? They're just seeing the people for what they are. That is what it looks like through their eyes. We've taken this great prosperity, all of these things, and we've cast them aside for other things, to chase other people, to listen to the words of other people. Britain was once a great empire. Was one of great empire. That sun never set on the British Empire. Where are they today? And still yet, they chase after this madness. They've lost their entire empire, and nowhere along the way did anybody stop and say, maybe this isn't a real good idea. Maybe we're on the wrong path here. They've continued to chase it to where now they're down to their little cuck island, and even that is being overrun. And still the madness continues. It continues in all of the West. Look at the mess that is Sweden. Look at the mess that has become of America. Look at the complete mess that is all of the West. And yet when you read the prophecy of Ezekiel and you look at Jerusalem as a reflection of self-proclaimed people of God today, which is supposed to be the Christian people, what do you got? Is it really all that different? And since it's not all that different, It shouldn't come as a surprise that God's judgment isn't going to be all that different. Something for you to reflect on this week. Like I said, we did something a little bit different, and I always sit here and agonize over, did I make the point that I wanted to make? I have to understand how all of these things fit together. You are in a spiritual battle. It's manifested in the physical world, but if you never address the physical, I'm not saying you should ignore the physical aspects of it, the actual things that people are doing. I'm not saying ignore those things, but unless you take it that other step and understand, grasp the concept that you are in a spiritual battle, I mean, you're just going to find frustration because things won't make sense. What is happening around you won't make sense. And yet, things have happened before. There's nothing new under the sun. We think we live in these new, weird times. It's just new and weird in our lifetimes. But in the historical sense, it's the same thing playing out over and over and over again. So we have a blueprint. We at least have a rough guide. Again, I'm not saying it's going to be word for word exactly the same, but we have a rough guide when things take a certain path and it's pretty similar path going on around us. We shouldn't at least be shocked by the results of it. Again, we did something different. We read a lot more scripture, and I'm sorry, it's probably boring sitting here listening to me drone on and reading from the book of Ezekiel. But I wanted to, like I say, we usually just cover a few scriptures and, you know, a few verses and focus on those things. But this week, I thought we would read quite a bit because we're trying to paint a broader picture. We're trying to paint a broader picture of God's judgment, why God's judgment, why he says the things he says, why he is angry, and what he does about it. You went chasing after all of these other peoples and all of these other lands. Great, I'm going to give you what you want. I'm going to have you you're going to be overrun. They're going to turn on you and stone you and run their swords through you. Because that's what you chased after. That's what you're going to get. You forgot about me, who you wouldn't have nothing if it wasn't for me. You wouldn't have had anything except I took you in and called you my people. Hello. But instead, you forgot all of that, threw it away and chased the latest fad. You chased all of these exotic peoples. You brought all of these exotic peoples into your country. And now you're surrounded by them and you're wondering why they're not just fascinated by your beauty. Instead, they view you as less than a whore. We'll wrap up on that note, folks. As always, ran a little long. So we'll wrap up on that note. Once again, thank you to those who get enough out of the show to find it worth sending a few bucks. It is very much, every little bit helps. Believe me, it is much appreciated. If you want to be a part of that, that's at the bottom of the description page. We'll get out of here for this week. If you don't die of Corona Chon, we'll be back next week for the Church of the Lampshade.